Hello, and welcome to Leading Ladies, Past, Present, and Future, an interview podcast produced by Heap Entertainment that champions the stories and careers of women in entrepreneurship and entertainment. I'm Antoinette Westcott, your host, here with my co-host, Renee L. Page. Hi, Renee.
Hi.
On our show, we speak to women who have trailblazed a path and carved out a space for themselves within industries that don't traditionally afford them a seat at the table. Through these conversations, we hope to inspire listeners like you to pursue the career you want while making sure you have the right resources and advice to help you succeed. This week, we have June Carroll joining us. June Carroll grew up in Denver and studied political science at Brown University, initially preparing to go to law school, but ultimately pivoting to writing and acting. Instead of taking the LSAT, she decided to pursue her PhD in English literature instead. June jump-started her career in entertainment when she moved to the Bay Area in 93, studying acting while teaching playwriting and acting workshops to high school students. During her time in the Bay Area, she appeared in shows like The Magic in San Francisco Shakespeare Film Festival and Berkeley Repertory Theater. Repertory, is that right? Oh, okay. In 99, she received the Dean Goodman Choice Award for Best Actress in Suzanne Laurie Park's drama Venus. June later moved to Los Angeles in 2000, where she booked her first acting role in a film and was hired to write her first screenplay. The Will, a gothic horror film, June's impressive resume since then includes getting commissioned to write The Rings of Saturn for Visible Theater in New York, scripting her second feature, The Pursuit of Happiness, and acting in over 60 projects, including popular shows like Grey's Anatomy, NCIS, and Mindhunter, and let's not forget Hellstrom. Okay, welcome, June.
Thank you. Oh, you look
okay,
at you
keep
look
blushing, keep blushing.
Impressive.
Are you embarrassed efficiently? Well, thank you for being our guest and being
it's nice
here.
To ask. It's nice to be invited. Thank you for having me.
Oh, our pleasure.
So let's find out, like, what, so you originally thought you were going to be a lawyer. Is this following in your mother or father's footsteps?
No, I think it was just, that was just what was in my head. You know, I was going to be a Supreme Court justice. I was going to be a Supreme Court justice someday. I was going to be a DA, and then I was going to be a Supreme Court justice.
Okay.
You know, I'd gone through the list. I wanted to be an architect. I wanted to be a surgeon. And in between, I wanted to, I don't know. I hadn't thought about being an actor, although I think I probably was an actor. I just didn't know that's what you called it. I say that because, you know, like my sister and brother and I, my sister and I are a year and a half apart, and then my brother is 5 years younger. And my sister is an incredible storyteller, and I'm an incredible audience member. But between the three of us, we would tell each other stories, and we would pretend things like we would pretend to be the Star Trek people. You know, I was always Chekhov. Joy was always Captain Kirk, and my brother was, who was my brother? I think he was Scotty. But yeah, you know, we and so I think I was always sort of using my imagination. I just didn't realize that there was an official thing you could do with that. There was just, oh, there's this thing that, you know, we play, and it's just play. It's not a thing, you know.
Right.
People who do that are over there, and I don't know what happens to them when they leave that screen, but they're over there, you know? So it really wasn't until college, my first year of grad school, that acting became a thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm an actress at work. So I'm a nurse, but I'm an actress at work. I got to put on my face. I got to put on my face.
Yes. You know, hi. You know,
hi. Yeah. So I'm an actress too. Mm-hmm. Underpaid.
Yeah. Respect. Yeah.
Well, Renee's actually going to get her JD also.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yep.
Pull my hair out studying.
What year are you?
So actually, I went to the I actually got my MLS from the Santa Barbara Colleges of Law, but I actually did 1 year of law school at the Purdue Concord Law. And it just got to be too much. Me working as a nurse, me studying, because with law, it's just a lot of rules that you just have to study and you have to read. And then the legal writing.
Yep.
It was just me trying to work, pay for school. So I wound up having a big old bald spot here.
Oh, man.
It was just a lot. And then also a lot of the courses we did online, unless we had practicals at school. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't good with the computer. This was back in 2017. So that was a challenge. And I wasn't used to doing some of the courses online. I'm used to the brick and mortar. So that was a challenge. But so I had enough credits to just write a paper and get an MLS, and then I can go back for a year and a half.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, I didn't even make it that far. The bio says, you know, so I slept through all of the LSATs, and then the last round came and I woke up and I was like, you know, June, you spent 4 years promising yourself you were going to do this. You've never pursued an apprenticeship. You've never looked outside of school for anything having anything to do with law. Everyone you know who's gone to law school has come back miserable and like the walking wounded. Yes. You're not doing this. And so I just was like, you know what? I'm going back to sleep. You know? I respect because I didn't even make it that far. I think for me, I figured out part of the problem was I'm very shy.
Okay.
And then I was even shyer. And so the idea of having to ask someone for the chance to be an apprentice just terrified me. It terrified me. The idea of talking to people terrified me.
Okay.
And I think that taking a risk, school was one thing because I could struggle and I could, but that was quiet, you know. Okay. Yeah. I end up with like lousy grades, but at least the struggle in between was not something that other people would see. If I had to actually walk into an office and talk to people, I would just, you know. So yeah, and then on top of that, seeing, because I did study some, I did take some law courses, you know, and I thought it was fascinating. I think the law is fascinating.
Yeah,
really. Seeing though that there's not really any such thing as truth in law, there's just who wins, was so disheartening. And you know, I mean, part of the idea of being a Supreme Court justice was I'm going to make the world right. Mm-hmm. And when it turns out that you can't make the world right, you can only either win or lose. There's something pathological about that to me. And like, you know, my last year I took a products liability course. I got a AAA+ on my paper. I had watched LA Law, I'm dating myself, but I'd watched an episode of LA Law where some guy had bought a faulty cow and the cow had bad calves.
Okay.
And so he sued the farmer he bought them from. So mm-hmm. my project was a guy bought faulty bull semen.
Okay.
And wanted to sue for to get his money back. And I got a AAA plus on it. Honestly, okay. it was just finding the right precedents and finding the yeah. finding what won. And I couldn't, yeah. I laughed as I was turning the paper in because I was like, I can't believe I'm doing this. Like this. And then when I got the AAA plus, it was like, okay, this is not for me because made this up. I made it up.
Wow.
I made up a truth. And when people's lives are in the balance, yeah. that can't be okay.
Yeah.
And when you look at what's happening with the Supreme Court now, they say they're not political. They're very political. The Supreme Court is a very political body. It's just, it swung one way. I won't say that. An activist body. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's political. But right now, its activism is conservative. And for much of my adult life, it had swung back in the other direction, liberal. And I am so lucky, but I feel really sorry for kids growing up under me because the things that we grew up with as givens, that there is room at the table, that's not necessarily true. That's not necessarily true. So when you find out, you know, finding out that law really, really, really is whatever you make of it, mm-hmm. I couldn't do it. And then I found storytelling, and that was a godsend, and it just kind of saved my sanity. You know,
it's a different kind of make believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. But it's the kind where you can make a difference because you mm-hmm. can actually say what's true for you.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, you can say what's true for you, which is what other people do in other walks of life. But with storytelling, maybe there's somebody else who connects with what's true for you.
Okay.
You know, and there is, I think, the habit of silencing people who are different is a very cultural, a big cultural phenomenon in the United States. And I think that when others with a capital O start rumbling and saying, we're not going to stay in the corners anymore, that's dangerous to everybody in the center, but I don't care.
Right.
I don't care because I've been living on the margins and okay. I don't have to, and I won't. And language and story make it possible for me to live fully.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think a lot of that is shaped by growing up in Denver, or do you think when you got out, did you see a shift or a change?
It was a couple of things. I'm first generation American, so I don't have the same connection with my father was from Democratic Republic of Congo, now then Zaire. My mother was from Guyana, formerly British Guyana, now just Guyana in the Caribbean. And so I grew up as an outsider, even in Denver, which was majority mixed, but mostly Black and Latino. And, you know, I can remember the Super Bowl. I can remember going to a Super Bowl celebration at school because Denver was in the playoffs. I guess that's what it is. Denver was in the playoffs. And there was this big Super Bowl celebration. There was this kid, Charles Okeke, who had moved here from Nigeria and played soccer. And everybody made fun of him. This was Black kids that made fun of him. And would say the same things that you would hear whites in other schools say, go back to Africa.
Wow.
And that was one of the first times I realized, oh, wait a minute. Something's off. Okay. There's just something off.
Okay.
And I realized that the something, and later I learned that it wasn't off, it was just different. I learned that I was different because I didn't have the same history as everyone around, almost everyone around me. And so I think just growing up, sort of keeping one eye on what the United States kept saying it was and what it actually was. And being lucky enough that my mother, I grew up with my mom, had a history that included overthrowing and kicking the British out.
Okay.
So there was at least two generations that knew what revolution was like. If you're Caribbean, you know what revolution is like. And in the United States, there is a different, the framework for fighting for equality is contracted by a good 150 years.
Okay.
Yeah. And so it's not better, it's just different.
Yeah.
And the realizing that, oh, that's not mine. When I look at where my roots are, oh, roots is not a thing for me because I literally am African. And, you know, growing up with a living sense of what that meant, which was, you know, not as, Africa was not this profound mecca for me, because I had a very different relationship with the country, with my home country and with the continent. There was just that. Africa is not a country, it's a continent. And there's a lot of people on that continent. And
mm-hmm.
not all of them are good. Not all of them are bad, but, you know, so basically growing up an outsider and then, and not really knowing how to wrap my brain around things like saying the Pledge of Allegiance. It's like, why? When I was in fourth grade, I remember going, why? Why am I saying that? Because—
Did you get in trouble for that?
I didn't get in trouble for it. I just didn't get it. I didn't get it. You know, it was like, I didn't, it's a piece of land. And wait, weren't there some people before us here?
Yeah.
And I didn't have the language for what the indigenous experience had been, but I knew that there was something odd about the way we were taught to worship something that wasn't ours. It just wasn't, this land wasn't ours.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then there was just the idea of worshiping land was just weird to me. It was just weird. So I think I just always was aware of being outside. And then I got into college and I tried to do what I thought was going to give me some grounding, which was political science and law. And then I was going to be the Supreme Court justice and da 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 da. Then I found out with my, it was a godsend, getting into English literature and getting into literary criticism. The problem is language. I'm not coming at language from the same place as many of the people that are around me. I get it. I'm not crazy. I'm just different.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And all of a sudden I had a place to put, like my, I found out that this writer that I love, Wilson Harris, weird dude, totally weird dude, Guyanese, like me, weird dude, would do this crazy stuff with language. And it'd be like, what is this man talking about? Wait a minute. I do that too. Oh, it's language. I just have a different relationship with language. And so the language of patriotism, the language of patriarchy, the language of, I just have such a different relationship to all of that stuff. And I finally had somewhere to put it, which was poetry, and then plays. And then I could start to, it took me 20 years to start to put myself into plays, meaning not me literally, but meaning being able to see a Black woman as the center of the story without being crazy and damaged. It took me 20 years to do that. And I think that that had to do with my, with growing up in the United States and not seeing Black women anywhere as the center of the story. There was Uhura, but she was always off like with a headset in her ear, you know, you know, telling the captain what was going on, but not really a part of the action, except for that one time that she kissed Kirk.
Right.
You know, that wasn't, that's not me. And Cicely Tyson was amazing, but she wasn't me. And, right. You know, the folks from Roots, they were amazing. That wasn't me. But slowly, while my mind was able to get into my plays, I wasn't able to until just fairly recently. So it's been, it's been quite a journey. All of that is just to say that I was an outsider in so many ways, and language was the way that I found my way back to myself. That's what all of that big long blah, blah, blah was to answer your question.
No, I love it. How often did you, like, so do you have something to compare to when you did go back to Nigeria from what you're saying, like how Americans worship the land, like, and you saw that difference in a language? What did you see when you would go back to Africa?
Well, see, the thing is, I've not been, because I'm like, I'm not trying to get killed. Because
what?
The Democratic Republic of Congo is deadly right now.
That's
They're in the middle of a civil
Congo.
War. Yeah, the Congo is in the middle of a civil war. And it's just like, my brother every so often talk about, yeah, we're going back. And I'm like, no, we're not. Because they have machetes there. And they're very angry at everyone right now.
Yes.
So I think that there is...
So even with your father, you didn't feel like...
No, because we were estranged. So it was, that was what I meant by the idea. Oh. There was this idea when people weren't saying go back to Africa, that Africa was home for all of African American, right. All of African right. America.
That's what that has meant. Yeah.
Right. And it's a romantic idealization of Africa. And I remember getting into an argument with a friend of mine about this, a Black friend of mine. And you know, it's like, I know Africans. I grew up with Africans because my neighborhood, the people that I grew up with, though my father was absent, he had a friend that brought me and my family into their set. They were Nigerian, but it still was, you know, African community. And I think being an outsider, I was able to just sort of look at it a little bit with a little bit more of an
open lens.
Well, I don't know, open, I'm hypercritical, a critical lens. And realizing that, like, my father, I've come a long way in terms of not holding on to my anger with him, but he was not a good person. And that was part of his, but that was part of his upbringing. Part of his upbringing was he was a spoiled brat. He his father died when he was two. He inherited the chieftainship, which was taken from him and given to a cousin until he was old enough to inherit it for himself. He was very ambitious. That I'm grateful for. He was very international and intellectual. That I'm grateful for. But he was a deeply damaged person. And I think his connection with family was a very unhealthy one.
Okay.
And his connection with Africa, quote unquote, the land, was a very utilitarian one. And his children have sort of inherited that. And so I think that seeing that my father was, who is African, was not the Lion King. It's not the Lion King, you know? It's like, I often tell myself when I hear people talk, when I hear African Americans talk about getting back to Africa, be careful, be mindful, because Africans are humans too.
Yeah.
And Africans are flawed. And wherever you go on the continent, you will find good Africans and bad Africans. You'll find rich and poor. You'll find everyone and everything in between. And so it's not a monolith. It's not a panacea. It's not the end of your ills just because. And I think that, you know, there's so much that I can't claim. I'm kind of neither and both. Okay. You know, I'm neither American. I am American because that's where I grew up. I am African, but not because I grew up there, only because that's my blood.
Right.
So I think that the romance that African Americans had when I was growing up, and I've seen less of, because people are starting to recognize the various countries and recognize the various cultures. And the good thing about Ancestry.com, I still think it's bullshit, but excuse my French, is that people are starting to get more specific about what it means when they say that they are from someplace.
Right.
I think that it helped. It was the thing that my father gave me was a healthy skepticism,
okay,
you know, about identity. And I think that it has made it easier for me. I struggle sometimes, but it's made it easier for me to struggle with the question of, well, what am I? Because so many, I'm lucky. I'm very lucky. I knock wood. You know, I'm lucky. I know exactly where I'm from. I know exactly what town I'm from. On my mother's side, I know exactly where I'm from. On my father's side, I know exactly where I'm from. That's kind of not the end of the story, though.
So what can you say to someone that doesn't know that, like, where they're from, to find peace?
To find peace, you get to, what I found was, well, who are you now? Where did you grow up? Where are you landed on the planet, not where did your blood come from, but where you landed on the planet is valid, amazing, and beautiful. African Americans don't know, I think, the depth of the beauty of how they've survived. They don't know how amazing it is, I think, that their beginning, even if the steps are murky, their beginning, the minute somebody set foot on this continent and said, this is who I am now, I'm no longer a slave, that was something. That was really something. And when the person who survived and passed something of that survival down, that's something. You are everything that you have chosen. Every choice you've ever made is who you are. Every choice you have made is who you are, you know? And every choice you're gonna make is who you are. And how you choose to show up is a choice. You know, every time you say, I've written this film, it's an animated feature, and it's about two kids who go to what would now be Sudan, Kush, the kingdom of Kush, because it's not that it's not important. It's not that where Black people came from isn't important. It's not that at all. And I think that it is vital that African Americans, that Black kids especially, see themselves as kings and queens. I think that is so important because we don't know. Because, you know, every time we show up in Disney, in a Disney movie, it, you know, it's just a horror show. Or it's The Lion King and the lion's got blue eyes. And it's, well, okay, it's Janet L. Jones' voice, but what are you doing? You, and or it's, you scoured the entire continent of Africa, an entire continent, and couldn't find a single human being. You couldn't find a single human being. So I think that putting our faces back in history is vital and important. I just think it's not all there is. Going back to Africa isn't all there is. I mean, ask Henry Louis Gates. I watched his special on, you know, like Africa. And I watched this man pillory the descendants of Liberians who, I can't remember the name of that, it's Saint something, at the gateway to the Atlantic, the Black Africans' ancestors sold some of those that came through their shores. The white ancestors bought some. And I watched Henry Louis Gates tell these people, how could you sell my people? And they're just kind of looking at him like, man, I don't know you. because it's complicated. Okay. History, our histories are complicated.
Yeah.
You know, and that's all I'm trying to say. You know, it's not as simple as go back to Africa. And it's not as simple as, here and now, you know, it's just, it's that simple. It's just not simple, is, I guess. And that's, I don't know. It's just not simple. And that's what makes it beautiful. That's what makes life beautiful, you know? It's just like, it's complicated. It's very, very complicated. And when I see people like Bell Hooks, when I see Bell Hooks, and, you know, it's it, the sorrow at her passing, is surpassed by the gratitude that I have that I encountered her work, because she was just this had this radical love of self and placing the self in history and in language and really just wrestling with it. You know, she's kind of somebody I aspire to be like, you know. So I don't know. She's somebody for whom language was complicated, and language was this tool. Language was a weapon. Language was a world. And all of that, she had at her command. And we do too, if we give ourselves the space in the room to do it, to explore it, you know? So anyway, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, I love it.
That's why it's important to understand people's background, people's culture, to not be ignorant towards it. It's just important. And I try to make a habit when I go to work, especially being in California, it's like a melting pot. And I try to embrace all cultures, their cuisine, their language. And I just think that's just important, especially when I'm being in the field that I am, I'm taking care of people. And people have to trust yes. that I am unbiased, mm-hmm. that I'm not looking at, you know, where you're from, the language that you speak to, but I'm looking at you on a human level.
You see them.
Yes.
That's amazing.
So I just like I'm working on learning Spanish. So yeah. Like all my everyone I come in contact with that speaks Spanish, I say, nope, we're only having a conversation if we talk in Spanish. And then the whole time it's like, my patient's like, I'm not in pain. Because all I know is Dolores Dolores, not Ben Payne. Or I can say, oh, Paquito Espanol. And then I'd be like, muy Paquito Espanol. but we have a great time. But you know what? I get applauded because I try and I understand.
Yeah.
May get laughed at. And then come to find out, Renee, I speak English too. You know what I
mean? Well, let's do a little trial run. June knows Spanish, so let's test your skills now, Renee. June, let's have a conversation.
Well, let me say. So when I go into work, I can say llama Renee, me llama Renee. Enfermero de noche, muy bien, enfermero. And they'll start laughing. And then I'll say,
June, so ask her a question.
Pues,
¿cuántos
años tiene, cuántos años había estudia para ser un nurse?
Escuda. En escuela,
años.
En escuela, veinte noches, años. We need Maria and Joel on here to help. I learned in like what 20 something years ago. No, 20 años. In Australia, Howard University.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a bison. How do you say that in Spanish?
I won't even pretend.
What else can I say? My patients love when I say this. Mucho trabajo, muy un poquito dineros. Boy, poquito dinero. No, chica, no. Not no. No, chica. Oh, no, mujer, no.
Do they say it exactly like that?
Yeah. No, mujer.
No, mujer.
And then I'd be like, Dolores? No, Dolores. That means, are you in pain? That's all I know. Dolores? No, Renee. No, Dolores. You giving me Dolores. So that's just it is. Enfermera, Diaz, muy poquito español. I tell them I speak a little bit of Spanish.
Un poquito.
Yes. But I try. So I'll try. And then, like the Armenian, like when I worked in Glendale, oh my goodness, like I don't care.
You speak Armenian?
No.
Oh, okay. I was gonna be like, wow.
No, English. What I was saying is embracing that culture.
Yes.
Like Glendale, Armenian, what I found out, Armenian men love Renee.
Mm.
Even with their wife sitting there, Armenian men love Renee. And I'll say, when you come back here tomorrow to visit your wife, bring me some coffee or bring me some Armenian pizza. So that's my way of trying to embrace the culture. But I want coffee because I'm working on
coffee.
Night.
Yeah. Well, coffee is universal. So
no,
bring the coffee.
No. Armenian coffee is like crack. You have a sip of coffee. You're right. Like I had once some, they brought me some Armenian coffee.
Yeah.
I was running around. Everybody was like, what is going on with her? I was like, come on. I was saying to the same thing. I was like, come on, let's go get some baths. They was like, Renee, it's 3:00 in the morning. Calm down. Like, I was just like, everybody was like, what is wrong with her? She's already hyper.
Well, we'll keep you away from Cuban coffee, too.
Cuban coffee, too?
Oh yeah, it's like Armenian coffee, like it's like crack. Also, it's like this tiny little espresso shot kind of thing, and like every afternoon working in the law offices. I'm from South Florida, and like every afternoon, like after lunch, like 2-3 o'clock, it was like, who wants their Cuban coffee? The girls are in there making all the Cuban coffee, whipping up the sugar. Yeah, I learned how to do that because that's good.
Embracing the culture and getting to know, respecting, and just knowing other people's culture. And I just think that you tell, like I said, on a human level, when you sit next to someone and you say, what are you eating? Or what is that you're speaking? I think that just is just showing that person on a human level, I respect you.
Yeah.
I respect you. I want to get to know you for you.
Yeah.
You know, on a human level, and I want to embrace where you come from. I want to embrace your Armenian pizza. Yes. Because my family is Black Italian. My grandmother on that side was Italian.
Yes.
So they thought they knew pizza, you know what I mean? But it's a different kind. But it's like, I want to embrace your culture. Yeah. I want to accept you for you. I want to know about you.
Yeah.
I want to know your trials and tribulations so that you can understand my trials and tribulations. So
exactly. About how to connect. It's how we connect. Yeah, just
on a human level.
On a human level.
Yes.
Yeah. That's really. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's insightful. Well, since we're being so profound and enlightened right now, Jim, what would you give like someone looking to you for advice, or what you would tell yourself if you could, what you learned, what you know now of when you were younger to help you along?
You know, my mom's best friend, Lejeune Bradford, this is her.
Oh, is that who you're named after? I meant to ask you that. Are you named?
Oh, no, this is my mom's best friend, Lejeune. And then this is my mommy.
Oh.
And no, we just had, it just so happened that she fell in, they fell into a fast friendship when my mom moved to Denver.
Okay.
Lejeune told me, follow your bliss.
Yes.
And, you know, I had sort of started making rumblings about going into acting.
Okay.
I didn't believe her. I didn't believe her, and I didn't believe Joseph Campbell.
Okay.
I think because the caveat to follow your bliss is it may take decades for it to pay off.
Or to figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? I thought follow your bliss would mean, aha, I make it. It's not how it works. It just means when you look back, if you do what makes you happy, all of those trials will seem small. Because they'll be small, you know. The payoff really will be that you look back and you say, wow, I did that. Mm-hmm. That's all it means. There's no guarantees that it'll be easy. There's no guarantees of an overnight. So follow your bliss and don't give up.
Yeah, never.
Those are the, you know, And I honestly do think that there's like the if you're going to, whatever you choose to do in life, don't have a fallback plan. I think that Sidney Poitier was not kidding. If you have a fallback plan, you will fall back.
Fall back, yeah.
Whatever your aim is in life, you have to be single-minded. And you have to accept that it is not going to be easy. If it's easy, you might be doing it wrong. It's easy, you may be doing it wrong.
Man.
You know, nothing that is worth doing
is easy.
Who knew? I didn't realize that. When I was 22, I thought, well, it's supposed to be overnight. And it's not.
Yeah.
It takes the time it takes.
Well, I was told anything worthwhile is difficult.
Yeah. And I think it's true. I think it's true. It's like, knock wood, I'm not, you know, like, you know, set myself up, you know, another, you know, but it's all a mountain. It's this mountain and you keep climbing this mountain. You just keep climbing. You just got to keep climbing. I think like it's what, true.
I like what Oprah says, that I know that if I'm getting it correct, and I don't want to disrespect Oprah, that failure is just another way of showing you a different direction.
Yeah.
When Oprah says, like, you know, because she said that she failed many times. Mm-hmm. And she said it's just a way of life, if that's correct, if I'm quoting her correctly, pushing you in another direction, where you're supposed to be. And like now in my journey of things that I want to do, I welcome failure for me to learn from it.
Yeah.
Because it's when you fail at something, it's a big lesson in it. And it's like, okay, am I going to keep trying? Am I going to keep going? Or am I going to just go a different direction? And
yeah,
maybe
yeah.
That is the direction. Maybe God wants me to go in that direction. So
yeah.
So yeah.
I think it's true. I think it's true. It's, and I, the one thing that I think is, people say, well, you know, your path will show itself. I think it's all your path.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, there's this little bit of the of the path, and then there's that little bit. It's just not a straight line, you know?
Oh, definitely.
And yeah, I think she's right. It's like, sometimes you fail, and that is actually okay. It's just,
it is
part of the path. It,
yep.
You know?
It's sometimes just part a of lesson. It's a lesson in the failure. Sometimes.
I think so. I think mm-hmm. No. I don't think so. I know so.
Yeah.
There's a lesson in all of it. Mm-hmm. You know, and the stuff that, if you got it right away, if you won right away, if you succeeded right away, you just wonder if it would mean the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? It's like when I think.
Well, it's when you're ready to accept it.
Mm-hmm. When you're ready to accept it. Yeah. Are you ready to accept it? If you're ready to accept it, great. It happens. If you're not, then, you know, it'll be around. It'll come around again. You know,
but you can't give up. If that's something that your heart is, you got to keep at it 1,000 times. You got to keep putting hours in it. You got to keep at it. You can't quit. And the thing is with me, with the law stuff, I've come too far for me to even quit. Like, I mean, I'm going to be a 78-year-old woman and I'm going to be saying, can I have a deadline on my paper? You know,
so be
gray silver hair, but I'm still going to be, look, I'll be like, here's my paper, professor.
So be it. Yeah.
And I'm like, thank you. you know, 100 years old.
Practicing.
Yep, practicing. Man, I can hear it. Be like, Your Honor, can you repeat that? I can't. What? Okay. I'm in contempt. What do you mean I'm in contempt? Mm-hmm. Okay.
What do you mean I'm in contempt?
Yeah. What? I can't hear. Okay, Your Honor. Yeah.
You heard him, right, Renee?
Yeah,
I heard him.
Yeah, my client here.
I fall asleep. Just falling right asleep.
I'm still going to get up and I'm going to try. 107 years old, because I'm not a quitter. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
They may outlaw me, like, no, you know, but. Mm-hmm.
You just don't know what is on the other side of that boulder.
Yeah.
It's like, why not? I mean, you come this far. Why not see what's on the other side of it?
Yeah. Or the possibility.
The possibility. I just.
Which are endless.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
The possibilities really are endless. You know.
Well, let me ask you a question. You're in Denver, right?
I don't know. I'm in Los Angeles.
Okay, but you were in Denver. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you should be an avid skier, right?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Going downhill fast. Why? Somebody explain to me why. Why is that a thing?
If you're in Denver, Colorado, when I think of Colorado, I think of skiing, Daisy Jackson.
All I think of is people with broken legs. That's all I think of. I think people with broken legs. I think Sonny Bono. I think all those people business. Who died running into trees. That is not for me.
Okay. I'm just thinking you're in Colorado, you got your avid skier.
Caribbean don't go on the skis, no. Why would I be going on the skis?
Just try it, Mom.
No!
Is that the way your mom spoke?
What's wrong with you? You think you're going to go downhill on the skis? No! No! I say no! No way, man.
Well, okay, so I have that same thing. Why go in the ocean and swim when you can be bit by sharks and drown?
Well, this is true. This is very true. Yeah, I mean, she makes a good point. Yeah. I will not argue with that point because it's very true. You can get stung by us. You can get stung by a crab.
Yeah.
I got bit before. It just like stuck on and I was like screaming.
Oh, geez.
But you tried
jellyfish.
You tried it.
Oh, yeah. You didn't even do a bunny slope, June.
You're not going shallow or something.
You didn't get on the list?
No. Are you kidding? And then what happens? I'll be the one, the lift gets stuck, and I'll be sitting there 500 feet in the air.
Swinging. It's the view. Remember we talked about it.
Yeah, it's the view. Somebody take me a picture. I'll enjoy the picture from the picture.
No tubing? How about no skiing, sledding? No. Like to do the jet ski thing?
No. Going downhill fast. No. It's just not meant to be. If we were meant to be on skis, we'd be bored with them.
Okay.
So is that symbiotic of how you think? Because you say going down a hill fast. So does that equate to going in a direction fast or getting there fast, like in your life? You going towards something and it's not meant, you take your time, but if it's too fast, it's like, you have to pump the brakes a little bit. Be like, wait a minute.
I think there is something to that, actually. Okay. I do think that I would not have said this 30 years ago, but slow and steady definitely wins the race.
Okay.
And there's just, you know, it's like you just eat up all that real estate speeding down the hill and you're missing all of the stuff going by you. And you know, stop and smell the roses. I think there might be something to that. Yeah. Plus, it's downhill fast, and that just doesn't seem like a good idea to me. It does not strike me as a good idea.
Right. But that's just you. So that's just you. So slow and easy wins the race. So with you, that's part of your character that it's like, I'm born in this way. We're not going to get on the skis. We're not going to do it, but we're going to take our time and we just want to enjoy it.
I mean, I do think that I like things to move quickly, but not with, I don't know. I think it's also control. Okay. I think the problem with speed is that you sacrifice control.
Okay. That's a good way of
putting, I can't control that tree coming at me. And it's just like, that tree's not going to move just because I want it to move. So I prefer to stay away from the tree.
And some people like that. And the thing is, with some people that's built in their character, that they like they like that fast pace, that the adrenaline. They love it.
So it's literally our minds controlling everything, because like I learned how to drive a motorcycle, and so I got my I'm endorsed. I did the screen freeze? Did y'all have a computer? Is that okay? But it goes along with what you're saying with skiing, where I learned it again, learning how to drive again in the snow for the first time. I went to Sundance 2020, right before we shut down, And I had never driven snow. I'm from Florida. I had only seen snow twice. And when I went up north, you know, but learning how to drive a motorcycle, the nerve-wracking thing was like making a corner and if I was going to fall in the ditch or if I was going to go over there. So what you had to do was look where you want to go. Like they teach you that with like ice skating too, you know, like where do you want to go? If you look in the ditch, you're going to go in the ditch. If you're looking, if you're skiing and you're looking at the tree, don't hit it. Don't hit it. Why am I still heading to it? Because you're looking at it. Look over here and you're going to go here.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I can hear that. Mm-hmm. I can hear that. Sense. I still won't do it. But I totally hear that. Looking, if you're looking in the direction you go, that's exactly where you'll end up.
Where you're going to go.
Exactly. So like learning and to drive in the snow with the mountains, like so twisting and curving, it was, I wouldn't look like at the road or whatever. Like I would look in the foreground. So I wasn't looking at the lines to make sure I stayed in them. I was like, oh, I'm going to come up here. And the car didn't jerk. Like I didn't get that, you know, like, oh, I got to correct myself. It was so smooth. And that was driving a car. I've been driving, you know, since we were 16, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really neat.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Ah, oh, I could teach the ladies something to do. Okay, we're going to wrap up. We can talk to you all day, June. Like this is going so well, but I want to keep it as close to an hour for you as possible and respect your time.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
Renee, do you have anything specific you have?
For I just wanted to know about the skiing. That's all I want to do is go to Colorado Aspens. Like that's
good.
All.
Well, we can go.
Look in the direction you want to go. Just follow her direction. Look the direction you want to go. Don't look at
I'm
the
looking
tree.
Towards Colorado, and that's where I'm going to go.
That's where you're going.
Yes.
Well, I have so many questions. I don't know which ones to ask you first, but I'm going to pick one. What advice would you give an aspiring entertainer or writer trying to get into the industry?
I would say expect it to take as long as it takes.
I like that.
And the other thing I would say is, study Shakespeare. Honestly, I mean, I think it's Shakespeare is an acting lesson.
Yeah,
you know. So I think study Shakespeare. Expect it to take as long as it takes. And try to say yes as much as you can, without giving away your sovereignty. It's one thing to say yes, but don't say yes anything. You know?
Be selective in your yeses.
Be selective about what you say yes to.
But yeah. Say yes.
But say yes.
I just learned how to say no.
Me too.
Well, yeah. I mean, but that's where the selectiveness comes in. You know, it's like, what is it? What am I saying yes to? You know, man. What am I saying yes to? And don't be afraid to ask for what you want. That's been that's a hard one. That's a hard one because you don't want to come off as difficult, and you don't want to. And it's not about, you know, I want
a
trailer. It's not about that stuff, but it's like, it's actually okay in an audition to say, what does this mean? Make a choice. Don't come in and expect them to give you the whole performance. Make choices. But if you don't understand something, ask.
Yeah.
If you don't know, ask.
Yeah.
You save yourself a lot of misery.
Yeah.
Okay,
a few more questions. We're going to do rapid fire. So first thing that pops in your brain, and then we'll close out. The first one, I saw this on a Facebook post like a month ago, and it was pretty cool, and I love it because I went and looked up like all these products and different things that people wrote. I was on Facebook way too long and I'm never on there. Okay, what is one of the best investments you made under $100 this year?
Under $100? Journal.
Oh. Yeah. Okay, what's your favorite book?
The Infinite Rehearsal by Wilson Harris.
Oh, that's, you mentioned him earlier.
Mm-hmm.
What's your number one advice for self-care?
Journal. Yeah, journal. Write it all out.
If you were to switch careers tomorrow, what would you try?
DJ.
Oh, yeah, the music.
DJ.
What's the first thing you do every morning?
Journal.
There's a theme.
Journal.
Okay, last one. If you could have coffee with one person, who would it be?
Oh, Lord Jesus. Okay, either Jesus Christ, because I want to know, did he have second thoughts? Or, no, I've met him, so.
Don't say Denzel.
No.
Oh.
I think Shirley Chisholm, because I want a second chance.
Oh,
I was too afraid to actually speak to her, like, okay, as though she were a human being. And I had the chance to meet her when my sister and I had the chance to meet, and my sister had this great conversation with her. And I was too, what I would want to do over so that I could just talk to her like she's a human being.
That's fabulous.
Yeah.
I have a question.
So
what prevents you from hitting that snooze button when you get up in the morning?
Oh.
Panic.
Panic.
Okay. Yeah. It's like, what am I not going to get done if I don't get out of bed?
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, because I hit it. My friend said, you might as well set the clock to 5 because you keep hitting it from 4:30 to 5.
Might as well.
The whole 30 minutes snoozing.
Yep. See, having done the same thing, I just went ahead and gave in and gave it the extra half hour or hour, more like half hour. I mean, you're good. You're half an hour. I'm like an hour. I'll be up at 6 o'clock. No. 6, no. On 7:30 and just stop pretending.
Okay.
So I've gotten better.
Well, thank you so much, Jim. Yes, I really appreciate so you coming on. And thank it's so lovely me. To see you.
Really wonderful to see you again, Miss Antoinette. So wonderful to meet you, Renee.
Oh my goodness. The honor is all mine. I just inspirational and just, whoo, just thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you both.
I didn't even get to talk about the career and all of the great things you've been in. Oh, we're going to have you back. Yeah, you're going to have to come back.
May I? I would love to.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we got lots more to get into your brain on. more blushing. For our viewers listening or watching, like, do you want to give out any of your handles, any of your links to Instagram?
Oh yeah. I'm on for Twitter and Instagram. It's June Carroll, all one word, all lowercase, JUNECARRYL, with the little at sign at the top for both. And yeah. Oh, if there's this really cool thing that I got to do, and if you want to see it, it's under the Vagrancy Theater. It's called The Life and Death Of. If you want to see it, it's like 22 minutes. It's 16 actresses doing a monologue about Oluwatoyin Salau, who was a Black Lives Matter activist who was murdered back in 2020 and was an amazing human.
The Life and Death Of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
On YouTube under The Vagrant.
Okay. YouTube. Okay.
And this is something you wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
And it's on video.
Yeah.
To watch. Okay. I just want to make sure I'm clear. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm gonna sneak and watch it tonight when I'm at work. I'm gonna sneak and watch it.
Yeah. If you have 20 minutes. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
These actresses are really remarkable. So yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yay. Okay, well, thank you. And thanks to all of you for tuning in to this week's episode. For more of our content, you can follow us on social media at HeapEnt, HEEPENT. If you had feedback, questions,
suggestions, collab pitches, or anything you want to tell us, reach out to our team at HeapEnt, that's HEEPENT, @gmail.com. Until next time, thank you for being our lovely ladies guest today.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.